Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Thursday, March 30th, 2017.
Justice!
Okay,
when do we want it?
Now!
New Yorkers stood up for farm workers this afternoon at City Hall. Manhattan Council Member Ben Kalos.
We're here on Cesar Chavez Day, the eve of what would have been his 90th birthday, to call for justice for farm workers and for the passage of the Farm Workers Act in the state legislature.
So many people are now going to farmers markets and they're buying their fruit and vegetable from local carts, but often don't think of the farm workers and their rights.
That's correct. And so the good news is that more New Yorkers are buying their food local. Farm to table is more important than it's ever been. But our farm workers here in the United States and the state of New York don't have protections, which is why we're here on the eve of Cesar Chavez's birthday to demand that the state pass the Farm Workers Fair Labor Practices Act.
The purpose of this is to remedy a decades-old injustice.
Longtime farm workers attorney Barbara Millsack.
Farm workers have been excluded from labor protections, federal labor protections, yes. So it's up to the states, and New York State has to step up to the plate. There is legislation that has passed the Assembly for the last 10 years and not passed the Senate, and the purpose of this rally is to elicit support from the people of the city of New York who love to eat good food to support the farm workers who raise their food. And
they're not getting overtime protection.
They don't have the right to overtime. They don't have the right to organize into unions. They don't have the right to a day of rest. They don't have the right to unemployment insurance. They don't have protections from retaliation for filing workers' compensation claims. So all of those rights have been denied them, and it goes back to the 1930s when they were excluded from the federal National Labor Relations Act and the Fair Labor Standards Act because the Southern Democrats wouldn't support that legislation because farm workers back then were mostly African Americans. So we're remedying a decades-old injustice that comes out of the Jim Crow days.
Millsack stands with Queens Council Member Danique Miller, who says we've been here before.
For 3 years in a row that we've had this conversation, but yet we still have not afforded farm workers the rights and protections that they so sorely need and deserve. This is reminiscent, as was just said, of Jim Crow, sharecropping. And we have done much to come out of that moment as a country, as a nation, but yet farm workers continue, all workers enjoy rights that farm workers don't enjoy.
New York City Council members presented a proclamation honoring the Farm Workers Justice Campaign. New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Vividito says the Farm Workers Fair Labor Practices Act is not only the right thing to do, but it's necessary to ensure the safety and financial health of all workers.
Farm workers nourish our families, make our economy thrive, and make this nation unique. Yet these workers have been subject to discrimination for decades. Currently, they are not entitled to collective bargaining rights, day of rest, workers' compensation, or unemployment benefits. But the Farm Workers Fair Labor Practices Act would change all of that. We're not asking for anything other than equality and respect for this community. As Dolores Huerta said, she is obviously co-founded the union with Cesar Chavez, but someone that I have gotten to know through my activism, an incredibly inspiring woman, has said that honor the hands that harvest your crops. And that's exactly what we have to do. So we're joining colleagues here today to call on the state Senate and on the governor to publicly support the Farm Workers Fair Labor Practices Act and commit to a vote and passage before the end of this session. So, all right, that's what we need to demand. The ability to support oneself and one's family is not a privilege, it is a right. And we're going to keep fighting to ensure that these rights that are unjustly being denied to anyone in New York, in our communities, are put to rest. We need to definitely demand that. So, si se puede. This is truly a time when we can say si se puede, that this start with Cesar Chavez, right? So, thank you all very much.
I'm going to
And with more and more supermarkets shuttered across our listening area, community gardens, farmers markets, and local food and vegetable carts are more and more the means for families to purchase fresh fruit and vegetables.
Today we are facing a situation where slavery really is still alive and well in all kinds of insidious manifestations.
Ray Figueroa is president of the New York City Garden Coalition.
It's called economic exploitation. This is going on in the fields where the folks that harvest our food are laboring under poverty wage conditions, under unhealthy conditions. Tell it, brother. And this is a situation that is unsustainable from a human perspective, from a human rights perspective. But guess what? As the president of the New York City Community Garden Coalition, I can tell you that folks are struggling for land here in the city to work the land, to harvest their food, folks that are also facing economic violence of mass poverty and economic dislocation, where community gardens are serving a purpose in terms of allowing folks to be productively engaged in a way that is affirming of their sense of self-determination and honoring their sense of human dignity.
Cesar Chavez founded the Labor Union for Farm Workers in the U.S. Vincent Alvarez, standing up for farm workers, is president of the AFL-CIO.
We have continued year after year to make sure that we stand up for justice for these workers, for respect, for a voice in the workplace, collective bargaining, just a basic fundamental right to have a voice in the workplace, and so many of the other protections that this law would guarantee them that are so basic that each and every individual worker in society should have the opportunity to have them. So we will continue on the eve not only of Alita, and I think Cesar Chavez means so much to so many people and so much to those of us in the labor movement, because he knew, as we have heard in one of his many quotes, that it wasn't, and it continues not just to be about grapes or about lettuce, but about the individual people. That's what this is about. And we can never lose focus that this is not just about some statistics of people working the field. These are people who, on a day in and day out basis, provide us with basic food and necessities that we take for granted. That every single day, whether it be on the fruit markets that we see on the streets or in the stores where we shop, that these are hardworking individuals that are out there. And we want to make sure that in New York State, where we lead this country in the fight for working people, that we are doing the right thing. So we will continue, the 1.3 million members of the New York City Central Labor Council, to stand with this coalition in the fight for respect and justice for all of these farm workers, and make sure that the passage of this Farm Workers Fair Labor Standards Act is not just a dream, but becomes a reality.
Union leaders and elected officials stood on the steps of City Hall today alongside religious leaders like Rabbi Rolando Matalon with B'nai Jeshurun in New York City.
Hace nosotros ya más de tres años que estamos, nos unimos a la lucha de los trabajadores rurales en nuestra comunidad en el Upper West Side.
There's more than 3 years we have joined this struggle on behalf of farm workers, and we have been working at it. And we've been going hand in hand with Rural Ministries, which is an amazing organization. And I want to say that we have all sorts of laws that protect us from eating things that are unhealthy.
Tenemos todo tipo de leyes que nos protegen de comer alimentos que no son puros, que están contaminados.
But we don't have laws that protect us from eating food that is morally contaminated. And that's what we're here for. We want to be able to consume food that is free from oppression, exploitation of the other, that is free from the fear that people who work in the farms, the fear of being deported, of not having a day of rest, of not having health care, or not having rights like everybody else who works in this country and in this state.
Para esto estamos aquí, para honrar la memoria, to honor the memory del gran César Chávez, que dedicó su vida,
the great César Chávez, the leader who dedicated his life for the rights of farm workers. The work is not done. And to honor his memory means to keep the struggle up until the very day when all the workers in the farms, as in the factories, as the urban workers, everybody who works in this country and in this state, have their rights, full rights, like everybody else.
Don't be afraid is the message from Brooklyn Councilmember Carlos Menchaca. He heads up the City Council's Committee on Immigration.
Today we do not choose fear, we do not choose hate, we do not choose the darkness that is in front of us, because they are afraid of us. We have the power today, and in the spirit of Cesar Chavez, when he says, si se puede, he doesn't just say it, we believe it. And all of us believe that this is time for this incredible piece of legislation that has been crafted by all of you today needs to get passed. And in the City Council, you have incredible leadership, progressive leadership, but this is what needs to happen right now for the farm workers. And as someone like me who has had history with farm workers, my grandparents came here on the Bracero program. This is something that is very, very personal to me as a person in a family from farm workers. This is important for us in every state, not just in Texas, where I'm from, but in New York City and New York State and across the entire country. The final thing I want to say here is that we need to stay focused. We have a lot of work to do, and the compromises that right now are being made from anyone in the state or in the city need to be called out. And right now we need our state legislators more than ever. So let's call them all out as we bring them this bill and get them on the floor to vote on it. Thank you so much, and I'm here con todo el corazón para justicia.
New York City Council member Carlos Menchaca. And this is the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. The movement to end the use of solitary confinement in New York State prisons has gained some momentum from an action during rush hour at the Staten Island Ferry Terminal. Members of the Campaign Against Isolated Confinement targeted the largely conservative borough to gain support for HALT, the Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act, currently under consideration in Albany. Grace Price has more.
Solitary is torture. The scientific evidence is plain and simple. And there are over 4,000 people languishing in solitary confinement in New York State prisons and jails. They are in solitary for 20 to 23 hours a day without physical contact with the outside world. The UN Special Rapporteur on Torture has called this practice just what it is, torture, if an individual is locked in the box for over 15 days. In New York State, some have been locked away in solitary for years. Teens like Maya. At the age of 17, she was sent upstate and directly into a year of solitary confinement for nonviolent infractions, minimal behaviors, as how she described her actions. She said she was sentenced to a 30-day solitary confinement stint over and over again. She'd do 30 days, be out for a week, be sent back. But why are New York teens like Maya ending up in solitary confinement? It could be for talking back to a corrections officer, for wearing a new hairstyle, or even for having too many postage stamps. Brooke Ellen Taylor with the Campaign for Alternatives to Isolated Confinement says they really are needing the support of multiple assembly members and senators from Staten Island who have yet to sponsor the bill. The effort is to gain votes for the HALT bill, the Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act, which has no support in Albany from Staten Island lawmakers.
Can you imagine how easy prisoners are placed in solitary confinement?
Gigi was a survivor of solitary confinement.
Inside a prison, much worse happens. Hearings are a joke. Officer abuses happen all the time. And once having the courage to use legal procedures to correct these abuses are retaliated with solitary confinement. There are a lot of people in solitary confinement that should not be in prison, let alone being in solitary confinement. Solitary confinement is torture. That's why I'm here to ask you to make HALT bill into law, a very important step to be made towards criminal justice and prison reform.
Queens Assemblymember David Weprin, newly appointed to head the powerful corrections committee in the Assembly, says he hopes to take a look at New York's solitary confinement policies, arguing that current practice can lead to prisoners spending long, extended periods of time, in some cases even years, in solitary confinement. He says this doesn't make sense to him, but the question remains as to whether it makes sense to Staten Island lawmakers Nicole Malliotakis, Ron Castellarena, Andrew Lanza, and Diane Savino. Grace Price, WBEI News, New York.
In other news, New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer released an analysis of the impact on New York City of Donald Trump's proposed tax bill. The analysis shows the plan could hike taxes on 40% of single parents in New York City, while it would slash tax bills for more than 90% of New York City millionaires. Those with incomes above $500,000, representing less than 2% of tax filers in New York City, would enjoy two-thirds of the tax cuts. In international news, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says the death of nearly 150 people whose vessel sunk en route across the Mediterranean Sea to Europe this week highlights the needs for more effective search and rescue operations. Daniel Johnson reports.
More than 23,000 people have made the dangerous sea crossing from North Africa to Italy so far this year. Several hundred people have died trying, including nearly 150 in a single incident 3 days ago when their boat went down only hours after leaving the port of Sabratha in Libya. Pregnant women and children were reportedly on board, according to the sole survivor, a 16-year-old boy. He survived by clinging to a fuel tank and was rescued by a Spanish ship. The UN Refugee Agency's Cecile Puyi said that the incident reflects the increasing dangers associated with the sea crossing.
We see worrying trends, including lower quality of vessels that are used by traffickers, the fact that many of the departures happen at night in bad sea conditions, and the fact that on the vessel themselves, sometimes there is no satellite phones, which means people are stranded and cannot call for rescue.
The UNHCR appeal for more robust search and rescue operations in the Mediterranean Sea follows a pledge by the international community at the New York Declaration for Refugees and Migrants in September last year. Daniel Johnson, United Nations, Geneva.
And UNICEF is sounding the alarm over famine looming in Somalia. As Deanne Penn reports, the UN agency is finding rates of child malnutrition and disease rising sharply in Somalia.
UNICEF says 35,400 Somali children were treated for severe acute malnutrition in the first 2 months of the year. That's a nearly 60% increase over the same period in 2016, according to the agency. Furthermore, more than 18,400 cases of cholera or acute watery diarrhea have been reported in Somalia since the start of 2017, the majority among young children. UNICEF Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa, Leila Pakala, described the numbers as a wake-up call. UNICEF and its partners are delivering life-saving supplies in Somalia, working alongside local authorities and communities in the hardest-hit areas. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
In other news, the Dr. Reverend William Barber with Repairers of the Breach and founder of the Moral Monday movement will be delivering a sermon this Sunday in our area at the Riverside Church. It's entitled, When Silence is Not an Option. Recently on the WBAI Evening News, we broadcast some strategies from the Reverend in the Age of Trump, which he shared on a MoveOn.org strategy session. Here's more from Reverend Barber, who says the resistance movement must welcome those who voted for Tom.
There are people that are going to come now and see what they have done. We can't morally be angry at them and say, I told you so. We have to join them in this fight if we're going to win. That we have to consider uniting our group and having forms of civil disobedience in Washington, D.C., in their offices, and also back home in their offices. We cannot just have one or two actions. We must begin. A moral movement says that at some point you have to be willing to put your body on the line in a consistent way. And then finally, we should right now have a voter registration effort. Every call, every time we have a rally, everything we're doing should include voter registration. And it should be going on now, not in 2018, but right now. We're winning in the court. against these gerrymandered districts and against photo ID unconstitutional. But we have to. Right now in the South, for instance, if you register 30% of the unregistered black voters and connected them with progressive whites that are unregistered and Latinos, you could change four or five southern states immediately in terms of election. If that were to happen, that fundamentally shifts the political landscape. And so we have to begin having, not when the Democrats start their machinery, not when the movement, those of us who are in the moral and progressive movement, we must begin even now. And we cannot engage this moment with just having a rally mentality or an event mentality. We must think in terms of long-term movement building. Long-term movement building, which is one of the reasons why Repairing the Breach, along with the Kairos Center, at January 1st of this year, we announced plans to begin the National Moral Revival Poor People, Poor Children campaign. Not remembering what Dr. King did 50 years ago, but doing it and beginning to organize for the long haul, consistent, long-term strategy, keeping pressure on. And listen, we cannot evaluate our strength based on whether we win the immediate vote. We're going to lose some votes. They may go on and get more arrogant. The Bible says Pharaoh got worse before things got better. But when you build a moral movement that has long-term marathon vision, you either win in the moment or you lay the foundations and sow the seeds for the victories that will be come to pass. 100 years ago, everything that we as progressive hold dear was called impossible. People said it would never happen. But those moral dissenters of that day, those moral actors of that day, they never thought in just in terms of one day, one year, one rally. They thought in terms of battling and standing, even when the odds were against them. I just left Selma as I closed. In 1965, Johnson was not a Democrat, wasn't for the Voting Rights Act. The Congress, they said, would never do it. But a moral movement, Dr. King and young people and older people, white and black, put their bodies on the line, and they shifted the consciousness. It didn't happen immediately. The March on Washington happened in 63. Voting Rights Act didn't happen until 65. But they did not look at it in terms of one rally is going to fix this, one tweet is going to fix this. We are in a moment that is as American as apple pie. It's called deconstruction. But we also know what else is American, what else is also in the universe. And that is, in every age, moral dissenters have stood up and they have committed themselves to long-term movement building. And even if it means consistent, long-term civil disobedience led by people who are impacted by these negative policies, let us become the moral dissenters, the moral defibrillators, and the moral agents of our time.
The Reverend William Barber, with Repairers of the Breach and founder of the Moral Monday Movement, will be at Riverside Church this Sunday at 10:45 a.m. preaching a new sermon. It's entitled, When Silence is Not an Option. And finally, the Media Lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, is offering a $250,000 award for standing up against the status quo. Matt Bailey reports.
The award is for disobedience, which works to benefit society.
Disobedience, for me, is taking a long, principled look at a situation and saying, here's a norm, a law, a way of doing things that isn't working well for society as a whole, and finding ways to constructively challenge it.
Ethan Zuckerman is the director of the Center for Civic Media at the MIT Media Lab. He says the Disobedience Award is about going against the grain in service of what is right for one's country or community.
When I talk to people about the Disobedience Prize, I often end up talking about my friend Khalida Brohi, who grew up in the tribal areas of Pakistan in a culture that practiced female segregation. As a young woman, you basically disappear into your house and then later into your husband's house. And you're simply not seen in public. You can imagine this has really devastating psychological consequences for women. And so Khalida, facing a huge amount of opposition from her village, from tribal elders, started a project that has women working together on arts and crafts to be sold internationally, but also on women's education, education on women's rights. This is absolutely disobedient in terms of local authorities and local norms. It's also the right thing to do.
Zuckerman says this recognition, sometimes to do what's right, sometimes to make progress, is what's needed to step outside the existing ways of doing things and challenge the status quo. He says that's really what the award is trying to focus on. And the Media Lab's techniques at MIT are as unconventional as this prize. Holography, cognition methods, and electronic music are among the tools used to study how people effectively communicate. Often, that communication means engaging in some sort of civil unrest.
When you are engaged in an act of disobedience, being thoughtful about the ways in which this can both challenge existing structures, but also try to figure out how to minimize harm to people. We've talked about this very much being a nonviolent award. We're not looking for people whose disobedience, you know, comes from physical violence against others. We're looking for people who are finding creative ways of challenging unjust systems. And I think part of that creativity comes from this idea of finding ways to be constructive, finding ways to sort of minimize damage, particularly physical harm of people, while also bringing forth a pro-change agenda.
The deadline to apply is May 1st, and the Disobedience Prize will be awarded at the Media Labs event on July 21st. You can find out more by going to media.mit.edu. Matt Bailey, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, March 30th, 2017. The news was produced with Grace Price, Daniel Johnson, Deanne Penn, Matt Bailey, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York. Little beats of you, the little beats in me, will die. This is not a miracle, for this is not America. Blossom fails to bloom. Promise not to stay too long. This is not America, for this is not the miracle. There was a time the snow got blue so blue. Oh, this could be the biggest sky, but I could have the faintest idea. Shut up.